You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Since March of this year, millions of people have been searching Google for this basic term, COVID-19 vaccine. It is a unifying hope being expressed around the world as the death toll rises. The lockdowns continue, and we continue to deal with the new normal that is life during a pandemic. Is there a vaccine? When will there be a vaccine? Who is leading the race for a vaccine? But there is another question looming. Who will get the vaccine first? Is it the nation who developed it? Or is it the nation who needs it most? Or is it a nation with the deepest pockets who can pay their way to monopolize access?
Access to the product that we hope will be produced, or the vaccine that we hope will be produced. Access by all who need the vaccine. The allocation criteria cannot be implemented unless there is a global consensus on making any vaccine that will be found or discovered as a global public good. And for that to happen, we need political commitment.
Will the plea from the World Health Organization Director General for a successful vaccine to be treated as a global public good be heard? Will it become a new flashpoint, a geopolitical weapon used to reward allies and punish perceived enemies? We hear more and more about vaccine nationalism. But what about vaccine diplomacy? Could a successful vaccine be used to build new relations between nations? Welcome to the Inside China podcast. My name is Mimi Lau.
And my name is Kinling Lo. In this episode, we are going to look more closely at China's efforts to develop a vaccine for COVID-19 and its intentions to distribute it to countries around the world in what some people are describing as a kind of vaccine diplomacy. But before we start, let me remind you, vaccine development is, by its very nature, a developing story. Please check for the latest updates and news with our round-the-clock coverage at the South China Morning Post website at cnp.com. Our source document for vaccines in development was published around a week ago by the World Health Organization, titled Draft Landscape of COVID-19 Candidate Vaccines. We did a deep dive into vaccine development back in our June 12 podcast. It was called COVID-19 Vaccine Tests, The Ethics of Human Trials, Vaccine Nationalism, and Big Pharma. But let me give you a quick recap of the three phases of trials needed for a vaccine to be successfully tested. Phase 1 is where scientists give the vaccine to a small number of people to check if it's safe and how big the dosage should be, and to see if it gets a response from the immune system. Phase 2 is where the tests are expanded to hundreds of different people. And phase 3 is where the vaccine is tested on thousands of people, compared to thousands who receive a placebo, to see if the vaccine protects them from getting infected. And there's the approval process, where regulators in each country check those trial results and decide whether or not to use the vaccine on their populations.
So here's an update on a global effort to develop a vaccine. There are 139 vaccines in preclinical trials. There are 25 vaccines in phase 1 small-scale safety trials. And there are 17 vaccines in phase 2 expanded safety trials.
And there are 6 vaccines in phase 3 large-scale efficacy trials.
3 of those vaccines are being manufactured by Chinese companies. There might be more than one successful vaccine developed, there might be none. But if a successful vaccine does get developed, we get back to the original question, who gets it first?
Mm-hmm.
killing. If I said I got 50 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine ready to go right now, which people do you think should get it first?
Well, probably healthcare workers like doctors. After all, they have been saving lives in the front line.
What kind of doctors? How about other hospital staff like nurses, janitors, admins, or even security guards?
Yeah, you're right. They should definitely get them too.
But I'm also thinking teachers might need to get it too.
But why teachers first?
Well, we need our schools to be open, right?
Then how about bus drivers too?
But we only got 50 million doses. I hope there will be enough to go around. What we're doing here right now is a version of what happens in the emergency departments of hospitals each day. It's called triage. And the word means the sorting and allocation of treatment to patients according to a system of priorities designed to maximize the number of survivors. But that is not what we are seeing in the world right now with COVID-19. What we are seeing here is that treatment is being allocated according to which country has the most money and the right connections. We saw this in July earlier this year when the United States under the Trump administration bought up virtually all the stocks for the next 3 months of one of the two drugs proven to work against COVID-19. The Trump administration bought more than 500,000 doses of remdesivir, which was the entire production for July and approximately 90% of the global stock for August and September. But that's a drug that doesn't cure COVID-19 or even prevent death. It's a drug that shortens the recovery time and gets people out of hospitals faster.
And when it comes to vaccines, the United States and Britain are investing hundreds of millions of dollars with a number of companies. You have probably heard of the vaccine being developed by the Oxford University with the company AstraZeneca. There's a lot of hype and excitement about it, and it's now in stage 3 clinical trials in South Africa and Brazil. But they should know, the UK government has signed a deal for 100 million doses of that vaccine, should it be successful. It's also signed two other separate agreements, securing 90 million doses of two other drugs. And last week, it signed a fourth deal for another 60 million doses of an experimental drug being developed by two other companies. As for the United States, this week, it announced $1 billion investment in a vaccine being developed by Johnson & Johnson, guaranteeing 100 million doses, with the option of securing another 300 million doses. So far, the US government has spent almost $10 billion on five other companies, securing 700 million doses of their vaccines should they all be successful. Canada and Japan have signed similar deals, securing potential vaccine doses for their citizens. But what about the rest of the world?
Podcast we make for you, we mentioned the 24-hour coverage on the South China Morning Post website, scmp.com. In order to maintain our high-quality coverage, we are changing up our business model.
And that's why this month, you'll be seeing a new digital subscription offer. You'll be able to read a few articles for free each month before becoming a subscriber. And we'd appreciate your support.
Thank you. Two of our colleagues on the China Desk have been following the development of vaccines and the evolution of vaccine politics and vaccine diplomacy over the past few months. You heard from Simone McCarthy and Josephine Ma back in our June edition of Inside China. Here is what they had to say about the latest developments.
So Simone, we've talked to you in previous episodes. It's great to speak to you again. A lot of media attention was given earlier this year to this concept of mass diplomacy that China was pursuing. And there is this thing called vaccine diplomacy. Can you take us again through this?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I think one of the things that I think about when I consider the term vaccine diplomacy is the idea of vaccine nationalism, which is maybe the other side of the coin. And so as we're trying to get vaccines that work for COVID-19 approved, one of the things that we know is that even if we know that there are vaccines that are safe and effective, there's going to be a limitation on supplies at first. And so certain countries have been rushing to snap up doses of vaccines, putting billions of dollars into that. And there's going to be a lot of countries who may not be able to have access right away, potentially. So I guess what I would consider as vaccine diplomacy is, from the perspective of China, they may be able to reach agreements or provide vaccine doses of the vaccines that some Chinese companies are producing to countries that may not have other alternatives to get as much supply as they need. In fact, this could be a way that they could even shore up some of their allegiances along the Belt and Road, China's vast infrastructure and trade project. But one of the things that is kind of interesting about this is that there actually is another system that's being put in place by WHO and a couple of global health organizations that focus on vaccines. It's known as the COVAX facility. And basically that project is all about helping participating countries get access to vaccines. Their model is that every country that participates will get 20% of their population's worth of vaccine doses by 2021. China so far has not donated to that fund or expressed interest in joining it. So it seems as though China's idea of vaccine diplomacy is maybe a bit more unilateral.
That's very interesting. So China is not joining a multilateral project to supply vaccines potentially. And like you said, they just prefer to do it on their own right now. So can you tell us about China's foreign minister Wang Yi? What was his offer to other countries?
Yeah, so I'm glad you asked that. We've seen some interesting statements come out in the past couple of weeks. One of them is that Mexico's government reported that China's foreign minister Wang Yi has offered US $1 billion in loans to Latin American and Caribbean countries to get access to vaccines. Now, that's something that China's statement on this joint video conference between China and these countries did not specify. But what they did do was point to the line that has been very important for China within this entire conversation of vaccine. And that is that they repeated the fact that China's vaccines will be considered a global public good. This is really the cornerstone of how China has been talking about vaccines that are produced in China. It's something that was first committed to by President Xi Jinping at the World Health Organization's governing body meeting all the way back in May. So basically, that phrase was used again by Wang Yi in a meeting with Nepal, Afghanistan, and Pakistan just at the end of last month. And again, he said that those countries may benefit as China makes its vaccine a global public good. And Xi Jinping himself, back in June, said that African countries could be among the first to benefit once the development and deployment of COVID-19 vaccines is completed in China.
And I noticed that there is a quite high-profile arrangement that was raised recently between President Duterte from the Philippines and China. What was it about?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Duterte said that he made a plea to China to get priority access to COVID-19 vaccines that may be produced in China. That was received pretty well on the China side. They said they would consider the request. So it certainly seems that China is working hard to position itself to potentially be a benefactor in this vaccine diplomacy sphere.
It seems pretty clear that China is really ambitious in being a really big vaccine provider to the world when it's available. Like you said, they want to loan to Mexico to buy vaccines when available, and also the agreement with the Philippines. But what actually is China's strategy to supply and support these vaccines to their friendly countries in the world?
That's a really interesting question. So if we look at the global vaccine market now, China has an extremely small global footprint. Basically, the industry is dominated by Indian providers and Western multinational companies. But China is a major manufacturer of vaccines. It's just that it takes care of providing vaccines for the 1.4 billion people in China. There are a few exceptions to that. For example, China has a couple of vaccines which are approved by the WHO process, which means that they can be purchased by UN bodies, for example, UNICEF, which plays a major role in distributing childhood immunizations. So there are several Chinese-made vaccines which are part of those initiatives. But as far as actually how China would both care for its own population and be a global provider of vaccines, I mean, we have very few details about what that would actually look like on the ground. I think one of the things that's been suggested to me by a global health expert who watches this space pretty closely, specifically with China, said that China could really roll out its own vaccine deployment within China while also allocating some doses of vaccine to go to some of those, as you rightly call them, friendly countries. I would think that's certainly something that we could expect to see, especially because China has been putting so much emphasis on global public good. But we do have these words in President Xi's statement saying, once the development and deployment is completed in China. So I think a bit of it does certainly hang in the air. There is one other thing I should mention, though, which is that, you know, companies also can make some of their own initiatives and agreements. And so we have seen another option, which I would refer to as technology transfer. And basically that means that a company that's developing a vaccine can license out or even, it's almost like share their vaccine recipe with other manufacturers in other countries who can then produce those doses on their own instead of China having to produce them, get them approved in that country and then ship them out. And so the main example of that right now in the world is the vaccine that's produced by Oxford University in partnership with AstraZeneca. They have given the Serum Institute of India, the world's largest producer of vaccines, the go-ahead to make 1 billion doses of those vaccines. There is some indication that's also happening with China's Sinovac. We saw some reports that manufacturers in Brazil and Indonesia may also be able to produce millions of doses of the Sinovac vaccine, although I think maybe those details are still in the works.
Well, since the pandemic began, we saw that China has basically changed production line in the country for the production of PPEs and masks and even ventilators. Do we see this happening with vaccines?
Well, it's not a perfect analogy because vaccines are a highly technical industry and highly regulated industry. And understandably so, it's something you inject into your arm that's going to potentially last a lifetime. So we do know a few things about what China is doing. For example, a couple of the vaccine developers who have leading candidates have already made moves to ramp up their own production. So we see two different developers that are affiliated with the state-owned enterprise Sinopharm have already made huge production facilities, one in Wuhan that can produce 100 million doses a year, and then another up in Beijing that I think is geared for 120 million doses a year. Sinovac, another developer, is in the process of building a facility with capability for 100 million doses. But I mean, we all know China alone has 1.4 billion people. The world has close to 8 billion people. So those numbers are nowhere near enough. The other thing that that China has said is that there are 13 manufacturers that have already increased their capacity, but they haven't given more detail about how many doses that might be or what exactly that might mean. I think one of the things, though, that we have to keep in mind is that all of these vaccines are using different kinds of platforms to get their vaccine dose into the body. And so that technology isn't necessarily transferable. You have to have the right kind of factory to produce the right kind of platform for the vaccine. So we would expect that there should be, China has massive vaccine manufacturing capacity, making hundreds of millions of doses a year anyway. So we could expect that some of that capacity will be reallocated for producing COVID-19 vaccines. And as some of the industry experts that I've spoken with have pointed out, the government could really play a very key role in organizing that and facilitating that. And they don't think that it will be that difficult for China to quickly ramp up production. But it is a matter of really working out those technical details and making sure that you're matchmaking the right developer with the right producer and all of that. So it's not going to be straightforward, but actually, people that I've spoken with in the industry seem pretty confident in China's ability to ramp up.
Sounds like there's a lot more to come with this story. We look forward to reading more of your stories on vaccine development. Thank you, Simone.
We've got Josephine Ma, one of our China Desk editor. She is an expert covering the COVID-19 and vaccine development. So, Joe, can you please brief us? What is the latest with vaccine development?
Sure, thanks. There are a lot of things going on right now. The data from clinical trial 1 and 2 look quite good. And 6 of them have already entered phase 3 clinical trials. And that's the last stage of clinical trials. People are expecting data from these trials by year end. Yesterday, the American top infectious disease expert Anthony Fauci said he's optimistic there'll be a vaccine by early next year. But having said that, we don't know the efficacy of these vaccine candidates yet because they haven't finished the clinical trial 3. That those are very important step to test whether a vaccine candidate can protect people from being infected or getting seriously ill. But still, I mean, there is a lot of progress going on. And of course, because there are possibilities that vaccines would be available early next year, and different governments are already placing orders and signing agreements with different pharmaceuticals to ensure supply of vaccines if they pass clinical trial 3 and they get the licenses from the regulators.
Joe, can you please unpack for us the 3 leading Chinese vaccine developers? Who are they and what are they doing?
Sure. One is developed by Sinovac, which is a private company. And 2 are developed by Sinopharm. Sinopharm worked with Wuhan Institute of Biological Products for one candidate, and it works with Beijing Institute of Biological Products for another candidate. And all these are inactivated vaccine. Sinovac is having clinical trial 3 in Brazil right now, and Sinopharm is testing its 2 candidates in UAE. CanSino, another Chinese pharmaceutical, is having a candidate co-developed with Chinese military scientists, and which is a adenovirus vaccine. It used to be a front runner among the Chinese vaccines. It's actually the first vaccine to have human trials, but it's now still, it has completed clinical trial 2, but it's still haven't started clinical trial 3 yet.
So Joe, we've been talking a lot about vaccine diplomacy today, and there is a really interesting story revolving around CanSino, which you just talked about. Can you brief our readers and listeners, what is it really about and what is so interesting about this development?
What happened to CanSino is really intriguing. It has signed a deal with the Canadian government to conduct clinical trial in Canada. It actually planned to start from clinical trial 1, but they plan to fast track to clinical trial 2. And if the data is good, then they will conduct clinical trial 3 there. And CanSino has a long history of working with Canada because they actually co-developed a Ebola vaccine before. So people are quite interested in this cooperation because the relations between China and Canada has been strained by the arrest of Huawei executive Sabrina Meng. And people were watching this, how this cooperation would go on, and thought maybe like scientific cooperation won't be affected by politics. What we found out is the vaccines candidates to be shipped to Canada for clinical trial 1 has been held up by the Chinese customs. So far, there's no explanation from the Chinese side, not from the Chinese customs and not from the company itself. we contacted the Canadian government and they confirmed that the vaccines have been held up by the Chinese customs. They said they are still waiting for the candidates.
So when did the Chinese custom hold up the vaccine candidate?
We don't know the exact date, but earlier the Canadian scientist in charge of the trial said he was expecting the trial to start by the end of May. But in early July, the scientist said he hasn't got the vaccines yet. Just last week when we contacted the Canadian government authorities, that's weeks after they mentioned about the holdup of the vaccines by the Chinese customs, they confirmed that the Chinese customs are still having the vaccines. Interesting thing is the company doesn't really mention the trial in Canada anymore in public or in their internal meeting. Instead, they highlighted the talks with several other countries for clinical trial 3. In July, one of the senior executives of the company mentioned that the company is in talks with 4 countries to have clinical trial 3, and they want to have large-scale clinical trials in those countries, but those haven't been confirmed yet. One internal briefing by the top military scientist in charge of the research, Chen Wei, mentioned that they are hopeful that the clinical trials three for the vaccine can start in August, but there's still no formal announcement yet.
You mentioned this might have happened between late May and early June. I want you to take us back to May. We have a statement made by China's President Xi Jinping to the World Health Assembly meeting at the WHO, where he declared the vaccine should be a public good. What did he mean by that?
So it's a really opaque statement. The key message of that is China is willing to share its vaccine and also the achievement, the scientific achievement of vaccine development with the rest of the world. But how it's going to share it is not clear yet. Of course, China has promised to give priority access to its vaccines to some countries, for example, the Philippines. And whether China is going to share its technology with other countries, we're not clear, but China is certainly going to work with certain countries for vaccine manufacturing, especially those cooperate with China for clinical trial 3. Apart from doing conducting the trials there, there's a high possibility that there'll be cooperation in manufacturing of the vaccines in those countries.
Yeah, is that also because when we talk about China developing vaccine, it's actually a bit more complicated because there's not enough infected people in mainland China to test potential vaccines. So that sort of mean China has to work with other countries to bring this ahead quicker.
Yes, that's the case. That's why China is working with Brazil and UAE for clinical trial 3. The idea for clinical trial 3 is to test the efficacy of a vaccine, and usually 20,000 or more volunteers are enrolled for the trials, and a group of them will be having the vaccine candidate, and a group of them will be given testable. And then in real life, the researchers will see whether the vaccines can protect these people from being infected. But in order to test that, those people have to live in areas where transmissions are high. And so far, the transmission rate in China is too low for this kind of trials. And that's why China has to look for overseas partners in conducting these trials.
Thank you so much for your time, Joe, and your insight and knowledge. People can read more of your stories on scmp.com.
Thank you very much.
That's all we have for you this week for Inside China. Stay up to date with the South China Morning Post website at scmp.com. I'm Kinling Lo.
And I'm Mimi Lau. Stay positive, stay strong. You've got this. We're gonna make through this. Bye-bye.
For more podcasts from the South China Morning Post, head to scmp.com, where you can hear more about technology, trade, culture, and society.